Purim is relevant both in terms of lumdus, in terms of halacha, and in terms of a little bit of Sefer Torah. We try to incorporate all of the above as we approach Purim. So the sugya is almost like a sub-sugya, subcategory, for the general question of the other inuyim and Yom Kippurim. So we're supposed to get to start off at the very beginning. The Torah tells us there's a mitzvah of inisa b'safsha seichem. And the Tosh Mappa explains to us that the inisa b'safsha seichem does not mean you have to roll in the snow and suffer. It doesn't mean you have to stand out in the heat and suffer. It means the inisa b'safsha seichem means to refrain from achilush tia. That's the official Tosh Mappa translation. And the Torah says that the three halachas that govern you. Number one is mitzvah sasei, inisa b'safsha seichem. There's a lo sasei kichol adepshi alo su'una. And then that lo sasei, like most other lo sasei, carries with it an onesh. That onesh happens to be malchus. In addition to the onesh of malchus, there is an even higher level of onesh. That's onesh of karis, specifically the nichrasa me'amela. So the isurim of anything that's considered to be a bitul inui falls into the category of bitul mitzasei, violation of lo sasei with malchus, and a karis in addition. What exactly constitutes inui or lack thereof? So again, chilushti is clearly the primary inui or lack thereof. The Mishnah tells us at the beginning of the 8th Pech of Sefer Yuma that there are other categories of activities that are also included in this mitzvah of inui. The Mishnah lists off rechitz, asicha, nesasandl, tashbishamita as well. So it is very, very unclear, and of course the source of a great controversy in Mishnayim, how to understand the nature of these two different groupings of inuyim. So on the one hand we have achilush tia, and then we have everything else. What makes us believe they're different groupings? Because the Mishnah, the Gemara tell us, they only have karis for two of them. You only have karis if you violate achilush tia. If you violate any other isurim, the one would not be chayav karis. So what does that tell us exactly? The lack of karis, what does that indicate for us? So that's a big machlokes. Some Mishnayim say that the fact that there's no kares, that's a dead giveaway that we're not dealing with an issa deraisa. If there would be an issa deraisa of inui, if rechitz, asicha, etc. would be included in the Torah category of inui, then there would have been a clear ownership of kares for those isurim as well. But the fact that there's not, that means b'doy asicha really we're not dealing with deraisa. Another Mishnayim says in Matthew, not all isurim deraisa carry with them in the issa kares. Just because something is excluded from karis doesn't mean.
Do you do this your way?
My way.
Yeah, well, same problem. Low bandwidth, freezing.
Maybe someone should. Okay. So just because there's no karis doesn't necessarily mean that's not us in the Torah. If I'm not mistaken, we spoke earlier this year about in the Sefer Chometz Nuksha. Nuksha, according to many opinions, is in the Sefer Aisa. There's no karis. Just because Chatzishir is also better, there's no karis. So the absence of karis is not a positive of something being not an issa deraisa. Again, this is a running machlokes in Rishonim. So half the Rishonim hold that the Shari Surim are also better without karis. The other half say that there's no issa deraisa. Everything is only mitzvah rabban. The Rambam seems to take almost like a little bit of an in-between line. The Rambam writes that the other inuyim are also better, but they're not in violation of the law, in violation of an assay. And the Torah says that on Yom Kippur it has to be a day of Shabbosim. So Shabbosim means a general day of rest. So usually we interpret the word Shabbosim as being resting from Halacha. We're going to see Mitzvah Shabbat Hei. Later on here, we'll get to Daf Hei, that we'll see that the Shabbosim does apply to Yisur Malacha as well. But here it has a very specific meaning, a very specific annotation, that it applies to inuyim. So if a person wears shoes, washes, and other kinds of activities, he's in violation of mitzvah esei of Shabbosim. So again, whether you think that there's a lav involved in shayin inuyim, whether you think there's an esei involved in shayin inuyim, whether you think there's no issur matar involved in shayin inuyim, at the end of the day, the shayin inuyim is still also. So one of the isurim of the shayin inuyim is the issur of wearing shoes, the issur sandal. So the Gemara has a discussion in a few places, both in the Masechta Yuma as well as in the Masechta Yevamos, discussing the intricacies of what constitutes a minna, what constitutes a shoe for these purposes. So what in the world is doing with Sechet Yevamos is not a great surprise, because the concept of a shoe in halacha is important. It plays a role, not just in Hilchos Yom Kippurim, and not just in terms of Hilchos Tisha B'Av, which is pad near the Yom Kippur, not just in terms of Shiva, which has certain similarities to Tisha B'Av also the Yom Kippur, but the definition of a shoe is critical in terms of determining whether chalitza is going to be acceptable. Chalitza na alo me'aragla. We just spoke the other day, but we talked about this recently, about owning the shoe. Well, about owning it, it's got to be a shoe. If it's not a shoe, then you're not yet say chalitza. The Gemara has this running discussion in Masechet Yevamos and Masechet Yuma about how exactly do you define something as being a na'al and halacha. So when all the dust settles, there seem to be really two different approaches that emanate from this sugya. One is that the definition of a shoe is a very objective definition, very, very specific halachic criteria. Objective criteria, and the objective criteria is it has to be something made out of leather. If it's not made out of leather, then you might be put the pasuk from Navi, then it's tachash. If it's not made out of leather, then there's nothing to do. And then it cannot possibly be a shoe. The halacha cannot possibly be a shoe. And that would be true both for Yom Kippur as well as for Hilchos Chalitza. And then you have another approach that emanates from the sugya. Then, no, there is no absolute objective criteria, what's called a shoe. If it's serving the function of a shoe, it's acting, as the phrase goes, oh, looks like a duck, talks like a duck. Looks like a duck, so it's a duck. So if it looks like a shoe, smells like a shoe, acts like a shoe, protects the foot like a shoe, but it's a shoe. So according to other Rishonim, as long as it's basically something that you wear on your foot that protects your foot, and that is halachically considered to be a shoe. Well, according to that, there would be no halachas that govern what the particular material would be. That's a big, big machlokes in the Rishonim. So how do we pass in halacha and the shayla? So as we ask, so the Shulchan Aruch is very make on the shayla. In all three areas, in Hilchos Yom Kippur, in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, in Hilchos Aveilus Shiva, in all three places, the Shulchan Aruch is made. There are objective criteria for what's considered to be a shoe. And it means it has to have leather, and there's no leather in it, so then it can be the most comfortable, soft, beautiful, wonderful, protective. It's a $10,000 piece of footwear, but luckily it's not considered to be a na'al, and therefore there wouldn't be a violation of the Ilus Asandal and the Kippur, there wouldn't be a violation of the Ilus Asandal. Tisha B'Av wouldn't be a violation of the Ilus Asandal during Shiva. The Shulchan Aruch is made. However, not everyone would agree. So one of the big Rishonim disagrees with the Rambam. But the Rambam quotes the Dinim of Hilchos Sandal, so the Rambam seems to side with the other approach of the Rishonim, that as long as it's serving a protective role in your foot, that's considered to be halachically a shoe, and that would pose a problem. How do we pass in halacha? So the Mishnah writes that the Olam is pretty make on this. I'm going to go ahead and has been. So I am pretty lenient about this, that even non-leather shoes are permissible in all three of these cases. And Mishnah Berurah writes that those who want to be Rishimayim, everyone wants to be Rishimayim, those who want to go for Lefesh, want to be a little bit more Machmer, so some are Machmer for the Mishnah Berurah. Go and follow the Pesach and Ram. So again, Yesh B'Yesh, again, the each Mikra, then it's Mutzah, that's what the B'nai Goyle is, that's what many people, myself included, that rely on that, Rover the Pesach and Mold, that is okay. And there are some who are more Machmer, they won't wear nor anything. Those who are machmas, they won't wear any sneakers, even clothes, they won't wear crocs, or anything. Basically, walk around in the socks. Socks are not protective of anything, so socks, presumably, that would be mutar l'chol hadeis. When we talk about the issur of wearing shoes, so we've been lumping together Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, and Shiva all in one breath. So we have to take a step back and ask ourselves, is that 100% true? The Gemara does have a phrase in Masechet Tzachim, but basically the Isurim of Tisha B'Av are pretty much the same as Yom Kippur. Obviously not in terms of Halacha, but in terms of the Inuyim, so the rules are pretty much the same. But there may be, in terms of Lomdos, slight difference. Besides the fact that Yom Kippur may be the Raisa, Tisha B'Av is clearly the Rabbanan, there may be a slight nuance of difference. That's something that the Rambam already calls a possibility. The Rambam calls a strange thing that for people, but custom that when they were walking around the Goyim, towns in Europe, the Jewish streets and the Goyish streets, they would walk on the Goyish streets, so on Tisha B'Av they would put the shoes on. In the olden days, you didn't walk around, someone had sneakers, so if you're not wearing shoes, and you put Tisha B'Av for a shibi, you walk around in socks, basically. So there was somewhere at the custom when they walked around the Goyim, they would not observe this din of Nilsa Sandal. It's hard to understand why is that for the Polski American, because the Goyim were laughing at us. We're left us for doing a lot of things. Make a taste that this should be a problem. Like, why in the world should that help us at all? Back in the Bible, looking at us. So maybe what the Ramon's driving at is as follows: there is a Gemara Maseches Melikotam that says that an Ovel is supposed to do a Tipis Arosh. Ovel, the Yeshiva is supposed to walk around with his head covered. He's supposed to do Ketivus Yishmael with the Arab, and they cover the head, and then they throw the over the lip, over the bottom. So that's he's supposed to walk around during the week of Shiva. The Rishon really points out that most people in the sanctuary don't do that. The Ashkenazi community, they don't do Ketivus HaRoshim. So why do they do Ketivus HaRoshim? So one of the reasons that's given is because the Goyim are going to see us and they're going to laugh at us. The Ketivus HaRosh makes sense. The Ketivus HaRosh is like a sign of Kavod Rosh. It's a sign of very, very serious, you know, huddled in. They got like my talisman in my head, like my scarf over my head, very, very serious kind of a setup. So the Rishonim Ray, that if you live in a community where nobody does that, live in the middle of Poland, so nobody walks around dressed like wearing a kafir, like in the middle of the Saudi Arabian desert. So everyone's going to laugh at you, so therefore it's better not to do it. What does that mean exactly? What's Pshat? L'chaim Pshat is like this. The whole idea of Hilchos Aveilos is supposed to create a Kavod Rosh. Supposed to create a series, it's supposed to create that feeling of Avel. Everything that we do is supposed to have that desired effect. It's not so much the mice itself. I shouldn't do mice X, Y, and Z. I shouldn't do X, Y, and Z because that should create a certain aura, because that should create a certain feeling, a certain seriousness of purpose. But if doing the mice Avelos is going to backfire and it's going to have the exact opposite desired effect, and that's the kid of Amos. That's not a king of Amos. That's not a waste of time. It's almost like you shouldn't be doing it. If you live in a community, you live in the Middle East where people would go to Yosef Rosh, and that would be a sign to the person's, all hugged or covered up with something. It means something. Don't laugh at the person walking around that way. Okay? But if you do it in the Middle East, in Europe, and nobody does that, then it's a big joke. So it's bad enough to do it. So maybe that's what the Ramos is driving at here as well. That when it comes to Tisha B'Av, so the Inuim of Tisha B'Av are posh and expression of Avelos. Tisha B'Av is a complicated day, because Tisha B'Av is a little bit, you need a little bit of Avelos, a little bit almost, it's almost like an overlap between the two. So if Tisha B'Av is supposed to be a day of seriousness, of Avelos, so if I'm going to walk around without shoes on, it depends where I'm walking. If I'm walking in shul, no one's going to laugh at me. Everyone knows they did. I'm walking in a Jewish town, everyone knows it. The store. The afternoon, all right, the minute is, the store's about when people that are working in the afternoon. The guy walks into the store and Tisha B'Av 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he's walking in his sneakers, nobody thinks he's a fool, nobody thinks he's silly. But if a guy's going to walk with a better guy and walk you with his bare feet, imagine a guy goes to the office of Tisha B'Av with socks on, and they think he's crazy, everyone's going to start to laugh at him. So that's going to have the opposite effect. So therefore, when it comes to Hilchot Tisha B'Av, which is really Hilchot Aveilos, we may be talking about Mechuyim, so maybe that's the svar of what the Minhag HaOlam was. But that idea clearly wouldn't carry over the engine. Let's say a guy's going to say, I don't want to walk past my non-Jewish neighbor without my shoes on because he's going to laugh at me. And he doesn't laugh at you because you're blowing shofar in the street. And he doesn't laugh at you because you're burning your chametz in the street. And there's a lot of things. So he'll laugh at you for that also. So that's not an excuse when it comes to Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur, the Yisurim are not rooted in Hilchos Aveilos. No? You're going to say a day. It's rooted in a totally different halacha. There are Isaac, Rabbanan, Essay, Lav, Rabbanan, whatever you want to call it. It's not doing a velus. There's no velus. You're not allowed to get naked velus. It's yom tov. So it's not really a velus. It's not really a velus. So then there's nothing to justify that people are going to laugh at you. There's no answer. Don't laugh at you. Big deal. So get back to the story. So Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av and Shiva are the same practically in the sense of that you're not allowed to have nilsa sandal. And whatever you think the definition of sandal is, whether you think all encompassing like the rabbah means any protective gear, whether it means only something that's leather, so the basic standard, either object or subject, the definitions are the same, but there's a little bit of a nuance of difference. Could be that poke angle, that Litzotus angle, that may, at least according to Yisrael, possibly mitigate the Shiva, because Tisha B'Av, Yisrael Avelos, probably has no relevance in terms of Yom Kippur. There is another area of halacha where we also find is Yisrael Midas HaSandal. And that is the Mishnah, the end of Mishnah's Bracha, the ninth part of Mishnah's Bracha. So the Mishnah talks about some of the things you're not allowed to do in the Harabayis, it's more of the Yivamis as well. There's a mitzvah of Meir HaMikdash. It says, Hashem Saisei Tishmaru Mikdashi Tirao. It's supposed to have Meir HaMikdash. So what does Meir HaMikdash mean? There are whole different kinds of activities that you're not supposed to be doing. Those things are a violation. Those things are not in the spirit of the aura of the trembling, the fear that comes in Beis HaMikdash. those activities, X, Y, and Z, are violations of Midrashi Tiro. Before we delineate what those activities are, because this did apply, this man has that. So the Gemara says, and the Yim says, just as Shabbos is noig liyom vot, Shabbos even in Toshi Be'al, you have to keep Shabbos from Dari Deris, so to Mer HaMikdash is noig liyom Dari as well. So it's not clear that din, the Gemara says that Mer HaMikdash is applied to Dari Deris. What does that mean in terms of a general take on the Mer HaMikdash of Dari Deris? The Yaduah Meforis of the Machlaikis of the Gemara and the Shayim, what the status of the Mer HaMikdash of the Zman Hazeh, the Rambam, the famous Sheet of the Chazarim Mechir is that the Mer HaMikdash is Kedusha, the Da'araisa, the Zman Hazeh, it's in full force. According to the Rambam, there's not an iota of difference between the Kedusha and HaMikdash of today and the Kedusha HaMikdash Bizman Shlom HaMelech. It's the same exact Kedusha. And therefore, if a person Tomei enters into the Mer HaMikdash in a situation in a way that he's not supposed to, so that would be an outright Issa Da'araisa with an Issa Kares. The Rambam says that's in full force with Zman Hazeh. I'm not just talking about right now about those people who walk in Haravayas. If they're walking the place that they're not allowed to walk in, that would be a big problem. They're claiming that the places they're walking are permitted to be walking in. I'm not commenting right now about that topic. But if a person violates the minimum of Tumas HaMikdash, but the Rambam says that's an Issur Karis. And the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid is not 100% clear from the Ravid to what degree he disagrees. One could reach out to the Ravid if the Ravid means that's Ram Shemutah. The Ravid holds that Kedushas HaMikdash is Batal. Lokish of Lesser Lava, the Kedusha is not here anymore. And therefore, there's no Isra of Tumor of the Tabi Meis Bechlau, of the Tabi Mechas Lazar Bechlau, as well as that. That's how the Me'iri seem to understand the Ravid. The Me'iri in Sechah Shavuos, in Sechah Berek quotes, there were some people who used to go on the Mechal HaMikdash, and they claimed that they were following the Shita Sar Ravid. And then the Lady Recharayim who claimed, that's not what the Ravid says, that the Ravid never said it was more. So the Ravid just said, Nachar Kareis, Razzle, Bazzle, Shtukul Tayrus, what's the Isra, it's the Lav, it's the Kareis. A lot of Torah is connected to it, so it's not 100% clear what the status of Tumas HaMikdash is within the view of the Ravid. According to the Rambam, it's clear as day. According to the Ravid, one could argue that Mikdash is a little bit less than it was, or significantly, according to some totally different than it was Bizman Shemesh Mikdash HaKayim. The Mechaz Chinuch has a Sofek, according to the Ravid, what would the Ravid say about Mer HaMikdash Bizman HaZeh? So, according to the Rambam, it's a no-brainer. According to the Rambam, Mamash Shemesh Mikdash, Yoshi Tirol, in full force. Tumas HaMikdash is in full force. Mervin's in, everything is in full force according to the Rambam. Whereas according to the Ravid, it's not 100% clear. So that's a topic that the Mechaz Chinuch has. But Lamaisa, we're gonna work with you something. The Mechaz Chinuch has an interesting marshal. He says, would you say that the Mechaz Chinuch today, according to the Ravid, is like Shiloh? It's like the same way that the same way that Shiloh doesn't have any Kedushim. Anyone's been in Shiloh, so I remember a few years ago I was in the Teal to Shiloh, who was standing there, and the tour guide, but he was riding on, and I didn't tell us a story. This is where the Mishkan was, this is where Shmuel Hanavi was, where Eli HaKohen was, this is where Chana Davin, there's a whole Chagat, you get that. But I didn't feel guilty standing there. Hey, what am I doing here? Isn't this a Mechum Kadosh? And he said, no, not a Mechum Kadosh. Shiloh has no Kedushim, it's not as that. So since Shiloh has no Kedushim, it's not as that, maybe Yerushalayim is not as that. It's like Shiloh. Bizman HaZeh. Or maybe not. Maybe even the Rabbi would agree that Yerushalayim today is much, much more chomer than Shiloh. Shiloh is never going to come out. There's never going to be a Mishkan Shiloh again. That's not part of the Torah. That's not a historical agenda. Baruch Shalom is not Mashiach that coming to Shiloh. Mashiach is coming back if you build this via Bishim Mikdash Yerushalayim. You can argue that Yerushalayim, even though right now, according to the Rabbi, is not B'Kedushasa, but it's still Omer Lekach Lios B'Kedushasa, in contrast to Shiloh, which is not Omer Lekach Lios B'Kedushasa. So, however you want to not how you want to slice it right now. So the bottom line is that there is some degree of Meir Mikdash Bizman HaZeh, according to the Rambam for sure, according to the Ravid, may or not be. The Halacha, we pass like the Rambam, but in Abraham Mishnah Berurah, Nuchas Tishba, pass like the Rambam, so we pass like Tamiz Nala, go to the Mikdash, we pass this whole Meir Mikdash Bizman HaZeh. But the question is, this full Meir Mikdash Bizman HaZeh, This full Mer HaMikdash, this Man HaZeh. So what are those things you know I do? What is included in the Yisr Mer HaMikdash? So one of the many, many things on the list, and Mer HaMikdash says, is that you're not allowed to wear shoes than the, when you go out to Makua HaMikdash. That's considered to be a breach of Bar HaMikdash. So it's interesting because in one place, the Gemara Yevamos quotes the Pasuk Bar HaMikdash as a source of that prohibition. At another place, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk Bar HaMikdash, Shal Alech Maraglecha, Abbas Kedishim, standing in a holy place. So they're two different children, two different stories. So we'll see as we go on, maybe a big difference between the two. So whatever it is, whether it's part of the Isra or Mikdash, whether it's part of the Isra Shah Allah, whatever it is, the bottom line is that you're not allowed to go onto the Mahmoud Mikdash. No, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to go to the Mahmoud Mikdash with shoes on. So the later Acharonim raised the question, what would the din be if the shoes that you're wearing are not leather shoes? What if they're cloth shoes? What if they're sneakers? What if they're Crocs? So would we say that the same way that most of the Rishonim are, also shown that many of the posts, the many other ones against the Rambam, we who follow the Shulchan Aruch say that you're allowed to wear cloth shoes on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av and Shavuot, etc. So would we say that who would deny you're allowed to wear cloth in the Makom HaMikdash? Would we go so far? Would we say that's all the same? Or would we maybe argue no? Maybe you could argue that the Mokom, the Isra Mokom and Mikdash isn't subject to that kula of cloth shoes. What's the Svar L'Challenge? So we mentioned before, there seem to be two different reasons why you can't wear shoes on this Mikdash. One is because of Merit Mikdash, and one is because of Shad Alech Merit Lecha. So if you go down the root of Shad Alech, I think Rav Brachas presents it, at the end of the night, Rav Brachas, Shad Alech, it's a din of Na'al, so that's probably in sync with the din Na'al of Yom Kippur, that's in sync with the Na'al of chalitza. That's a now to convince. It's almost like exerce a kosel. It's like a din prati that you're not allowed to wear shoes. So if you're going to tell me that the isser is revolving around the term shoes now, then mistumble whatever the objective halach definition of the word now is, that's going to cover for basic mikdash also. So then to wear cloth would presumably be okay. But if you're going to tell me that the nature of the isser is meir hamikdash, it's not right for you to be tearing into the basic mikdash with your muddy, filthy shoes. So you can tell because they're cloth, so therefore not muddy and dirty. Also dirty. You walk with your crafts, plastic, whatever they're made of. So they're also filthy. They're also bizarre. It's also a disgrace to the basic mikdash. So if you hold that it's not really a din of now, it's an issue with shoes, but it's not an issue of shoes. The issue of wearing shoes is a part of a general picture of meir hamikdash. So then maybe one can argue that there's no kula, there wouldn't be any kula whatsoever. So it's not 100% clear. Later, Acharonim have a shaila about this. It's a fascinating application of the shaila. The post can discuss. Sometimes you have situations with Kohen Eber. Sometimes you have an Israeli soldier has to be in Shmiraz and go run into the Mahon Mikdash, some attack, and it's like, you gotta be in the Mahon Mikdash. So obviously, whatever is mutter, Kohen Eber is mutter, but we have a rule when it comes to Kohen Eber, you have to try to mitigate things, try to minimize things. So just because let's say you have a head to be Michal Shabbos, again, if it's gonna detract from the proper care of the chayil, okay, what are you gonna do? But they have to do it the most chil Shabbos, whatever's necessary. But sometimes you can do a chil Shabbos that's not 100% the worst of the worst. You can tone it down a little bit. So the din is you have to try to tone it down. If it's possible, you have to try to tone it down. So too, when it comes to your soldiers on Shmira, so he has to go on to Bakum and drain them, he has to retire to okay, just go down. It doesn't have to wear shoes, so whatever you can try to cut down. So when he does what you can tell the soldier to go run onto the Mahmoud Mikdash, run into the terrorist with his socks on. That's probably going to interfere with his ability to take care of his duty. But that we're not going to require. So what are we going to require? So we're going to say that, let's say, this soldier could wear cloth because we have a nice fit, nice, very comfortable, very, you know, Army will approve his wearing his fancy schmancy sneakers, which have no leather and no sweat in them, so he'll be able to do the job just as well as his leather boots. So we should do that. Like, why not? Why shouldn't we do that? So that's a machlokes in the post. The later post can talk about that again. I don't know whether anyone really has the shadow. I know the post can talk about the shadow like as it exists. I don't know. So again, it's a theoretically potential practical shadow. If you hold that wearing sneakers, cloth sneakers, mitigates this somehow. So then it would make sense to do that. If you hold that, you don't really gain all that much because when it comes to mikdash, there's really no difference. So then my honeyland, so if you're not making a difference anyway, so why are we wasting your time? That's a shana. So a kopanim, at least we got a little bit in terms of lumdus, in terms of aloch, in terms of the practicalities, in terms of isim yasasando. I thought we'd just spend a couple of minutes just talking a little bit and get closer to the Yom Kippur, just a little bit in terms of some drush, and maybe to put things in the proper perspective about the significance of this Isser of Nilas Asava in particular. So if you think about it, what we really developed here is that there are almost two different scenarios out there that a person has his shoes off. A person has his shoes off when he's going to the Beis HaMikdash. A person has his shoes off when he's teaching up. It's Avelos. So they're almost... not almost, they're diametrically opposed to one another. One is a position of ultimate Kedusha and Shechina and closeness and fakeness to Kedush Baruch Hu, and one is Churban Avelos and distance. Churban is the ultimate Golos and distance from Kedush Baruch Hu. So that imagery of where, of going Shulas, what imagery does that conjure up? Is that a conjuring up of an imagery of Kedusha, of Mikdash, of Avodah Sekhanah, the Dinizma, Kain doesn't have Avodah? He's not allowed to wear Shulas. That's not the reason why Kain takes over Shulas to Duchan. That's a different reason. But in terms of Mikdash and Kedusha and Tahara, so that going shoeless conjures up that image. On the other hand, going shoeless also conjures up the image of Golos and Churban Avelos. So what exactly is our image on Yom Kippur? Who exactly are we on Yom Kippur? The truth is that it's not just when it comes to the issue of wearing shoes that we find this almost like diametrically opposed, two different approaches. We find it in other things in Yom Kippur. We find it even sometimes in Halacha, sometimes in Hagim. There's another minhag that we have in Yom Kippur that many of them wear kippel in Yom Kippur. Wearing a kippel is a very strange kind of minhag, because wearing a kippel has almost like two different images to it. On the one hand, it's the Malach of the Malach Yashoresh, the Vush Abadim, so can describe that the Malach Yashoresh dressed that way, or it's indicative of the Kain God, like Sodas by Kedish Yilbash, but the Badi Vashim Sarai. Kedusha, Tahara, he's going to the Kesha Kedoshim. He goes to the Kesha Kedoshim, he doesn't wear his big day Zahon, his big day Lavan. So big day Lavan is a sign of purity, it's a sign of holiness. It's a very, very, very positive type of a tour of a bag. On the other hand, there's no great secret that the kippel is Sechricha. So it's also a sign of the person's Avelos, the person's mortality. So who are we in Yom Kippur? What's the imagery in Yom Kippur? What are we presenting ourselves in Yom Kippur? We're presenting ourselves as somebody who's like the Malachi Asharis. We're presenting ourselves as someone like the Kagol. We look down at our feet. Are we somebody who we have our shoes off? Are we somebody who's in Mikdash? Or are we somebody who never comes in, who's in Churban and Avelos? So I think that the answer to the question is really the challenge of Yom Kippur. That's really the essence of the Kormen HaYom. At least one of the central parts of the Avodah Zarah. Yom Kippur is the Shnei Seirim, or the two goats, the two Seirim. These two Seirim are two different paths. They're two different paths of human existence. That they start off the same. The two Seirim cross the same amount of money, and they have to look the same, the same. And then they part ways. One of them becomes a Karban Hashem, and one of them becomes thrown completely off the cliff and total destruction. So that imagery of the Shnei Seirim is really the question that we have to ask ourselves in Yom Kippur. Who are we? Are we somebody who wants to identify as a Sar Hashem? Are we somebody who wants to identify with the Malach Yasharis, with the Kayin Gadol? Are we somebody who wants to identify with Kedusha? But do we realize that there's another path? The other path only brings the total destruction that ends up in the bottom of a cliff. It ends up in Churban, ends up in Golos. These are very, very, very powerful imagery. I think the mitzvah of Nidus HaSandal, at least when Nidus HaSandal speaks really to the heart of the soul, the decisions that we have to make is that the ultimate Zinn, you keep us made up of a lot of pratim. There's which you have a lot of details, which you have this, clap 100 times. But at the end of the day, there's one basic decision. You're either in it or not in it. Eved Hashem or not Eved Hashem. That's the basic. All the others, the details are important. There's no question about that. We have to iron out a lot of details of tshuva. That's ultra. I'm not minimizing that. But bottom line is, it's one basic decision. Which side do you want to be? Which shoeless person do you want to be? Which kittel do you want to win? That's the real question. And again, once you make that decision, everything else follows. Usually when I give a shiur about Nisa Sandal over the last 10, 12 years or so, I always conclude with the following story. I don't think anyone here, I know I got probably got a bunch of boys who went to DRS on the call, but did anyone ever hear me give a shiur in DRS? Is there anyone on who heard me? Maybe it was back in your ninth grade days or probably before your time. No one? Okay, so one time nobody here gave a guest shiur in DRS. It was right before Yom Kippur. It must go back already probably about 8-10 years ago, so right before any of you guys, even the freshmen there. So I remember that I told this story. It was still fresh in my mind at the time. So it happened about, it was our second summer in Tzitzakon, about 12 years ago. So the story happened, a very, very strange story, but it involves Nosa Sandal and something that inspires me. Ada Yemen, that it was the old time Tamidim ever, but before some of the people in the Shul ever in the struggle with Tzitzakon. So, and it was that one summer, I was in Tzitzakon. And Tisha B'Av that year was on a Thursday, and I had to be back in America for Shabbos Nachamu. And the only way for me to just arrange flights, nice, whatever it was, for me to be back for that Shabbos, is that it was arranged that I stopped at Tisha B'Av and spent Tisha B'Av in Germany with the Ventius Wires. That was the arrangement in terms of all the Hajjbinus. So there was a group of, I don't know, which program was that? Which Ventius Wire program was that one? What? Was it
Jolt?
Jolt, I think so. So they were scheduled to be in Munich, Germany for Tisha B'Av. So I left Eretz on Wednesday, and I was supposed to arrive in Germany on Wednesday afternoon and spend Tisha B'Av with them. I was going to speak to them Tisha B'Av night and read the kiddush for them, and then say a little bit shiurim for them, and then and go, you know, a little bit chizik for them. And then I was supposed to fly on Friday morning back to fly against time working with you, and I was going back in time for well enough time on Shabbos to be back early in the afternoon on Shabbos. That was the plan. But I came to the airport in Eretz Yisrael Wednesday, early Wednesday morning. I realized that Eretz Yisrael was not a big day of travel in Eretz Yisrael. There weren't too many people at the airport. But I couldn't get, there was no direct flight from Eretz Yisrael to Munich. I had to stop in Barcelona first. So I only had like 2 days worth of stuff because I was going to be home. So I just need really, you know, a carry-on for a day or two in Germany. So I took my little carry-on with me, but I guess it wasn't so little. And the lady at the airport thought it was too big, so she insisted that I check it. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to argue with that. So I took my tefillin out. That's the first thing you know. So I took my tefillin out then, and maybe I grabbed the sefer or gemara, or whatever it was. I grabbed something. And I remember I grabbed those of the next, if I call them, appreciate it. I had some math case with me. Because I was just afraid, just in case I would like miss a connection, so I end up had this like terror of spending Tisha B'Av in Barcelona, Spain. So I figured the worst comes to worst, level. So I had a bunch of Max cakes and cookies with me, but that wasn't going on the plane. So I think that would be also. Anyway, the kids, of course, I switched planes to Barcelona, arrived in Munich, and waiting for my suitcase to come. Of course, the suitcase didn't come. Okay, as well. So it was lost somewhere in transit, somewhere between Erstrom, Spain, and Munich. Your guess is as good as mine at that point. I always said that particular trip was very, I felt like I was experiencing Jewish history because I started out the morning Yerushal, I went to Barcelona, Erev Tisha B'Av, that was when the Jews were thrown out of Spain, 1492 was Tisha B'Av. Erev, as the plane was landing in Barcelona over the harbor, over the water, I was thinking how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews were packing up the last Shirayim to go into Golis, including a little boy, a 4-year-old boy, the name of Yosef Cairo. He wasn't brought yet. He was Yosef Cairo. He was born in 1488 in Spain. His parents were thrown out of Spain, and he went with his parents on a boat, eventually ended up in Turkey. So 500 plus years before, he was on the same spot. I was flying over. So then I went from Barcelona to Germany, another place of a great exile, great Golis for Cairo. And then I went to America, which is, I was just said that's the last time of Golos. And then after Shabbos, I came back to Israel, so I figured I circled the globe Jewish history in the span of a couple of days. And anyway, kids, I arrived in Munich, and I don't know anything with names, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the Ventus Wire group hadn't even arrived. They were like taking a bus from some other city in Germany, so they were supposed to meet me. So there was a guy, someone from the shul from Munich came to pick me up, drives me to my hotel room there. And I realized I'm in big trouble. I don't have a thing. I remember I had nothing. I had my tefillin. I might fill in maybe a Gemara and 6 of Max cookies or cakes or brownies or something. Mamish had nothing. At the part in having underwear, a new shirt, socks, mamish nothing. And I realized my immediate concern was I didn't have any Tisha B'Av sneakers because I packed my Tisha B'Av cloth sneakers in my carry-on. So I went in Munich to go shopping, so I had to go shopping. So at 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, 2 hours before Tisha B'Av, I'm going shopping. So normally you're not allowed to buy clothes for Tisha B'Av, but during the 9 days. But post Moshe writes sneakers you're allowed to buy for Tisha B'Av. That's available. So Moshe writes the Pharisee, you're allowed to buy Tisha B'Av sneakers if you forgot to buy them. Or you're allowed to buy underwear. If you don't have any underwear to wear, then that's an istinus. Welcome istinus. You can stay in the same underwear for 3 days. So you're allowed to buy underwear, a pair of socks. So I went to some store, some fancy schmancy, the first buy store in Munich, which Patir, imagine the scene. It's lost 6:30 in the evening on Erev Tisha B'Av. She was tearing around the streets. And, you know, I never phoned even. My phone wasn't working. And, I guess I had no idea what I was doing. No idea. I didn't speak a word. I don't know the word in German or Yiddish. It was not a bar to get my message across to anybody. And the mice, I'm looking around trying to buy an undershirt and a pair of socks and a pair of sneakers. So I found the store. I go in and I asked them in English. And I had some, maybe I spoke some broken English. So I told them, I need, since she showed me, first of all, I need a pair of Crocs. So I picked out a pair of Crocs. So she says to me, no, you can't buy those Crocs. I said, why not? I said, those are ladies' Crocs. They're not pink Crocs. I'm like, why are they? No, those are ladies' Crocs. Instead of buying the Crocs, she said, go buy. I said, I need sneakers or Crocs. So she said, no, go buy those sneakers over there. So when I got home, by the way, I told my wife the story. My wife said she totally pulled your leg because there's no sneakers, ladies' Crocs. She told you that because she saw you were an American and she knew that the sneakers were 16 times the price of the Crocs. So she rolled you for $150 cloth sneakers. So I was looking up and down, all 100% man-made material, shine. So I bought the fancy Schmidt sneakers. And it's a pair of underwear and an undershirt and a pair of socks or something. And shirt. By the way, when I got back here to Stroll, 2 days later, about 2 weeks later, my suitcase arrived back. It had been sitting in Spain by the Ramban and the Rosh for 2 weeks. You know, they were taking care of watching over it when they were back there. Anyway, so there are two parts of the story. One is a very moving part, and one is a little bit more humorous part. So the moving part was I was looking down, I'm looking at myself at that moment in time, and I realized just how lonely our existence is, just how we're how nothing we are, just how the mamish like the kofel ka'afid yara in the presence of Kiddush Baruch Hu. Here I am, I have nobody who I can talk to because nobody speaks the language. I said, I have even guys mentioned why I weren't even there yet. I don't have a pair of underwear. I don't have a pair of socks. I don't have a pair of shoes. I said, I'm walking around the streets of Munich, Germany, where that was the birth of Nazism. Munich was where Hitler Machmas started. That's where he rose to power, Munich. I said, all the people there are sitting around drinking beer and in their pubs and the cafes. And I'm walking around, you know, scared. I was not walking around the office. I was wearing my baseball cap. And like completely and totally engulfed. You can't get worse engulfed than to be walking around Germany at 7 o'clock, you know, an hour before Shkia, trying to find a pair of sneakers to wear. You can't get a more feeling of vulnerability than that. And those sneakers that I bought, so Adiyam and Zag, I wear those sneakers every Yom Kippur and every Tishma. Those are my Yom Kippur shoes, those are my Tishma shoes. Even though I got plenty of other cloth sneakers and Crocs and maybe more comfortable ones at home. But those are the ones I wear every year because I want to, when I go to Kol Nidre every year and I look down at my feet, I want to remember that feeling. I want to remember what it means to be Gafad Yah, what it means to be Bottle of Bottle. So that's part of the message of the shoes. That shoes, the clothes makes a man, shoes makes a man. It's called Kumashe Bragleim, the Chazal says, not lying. Shoes, you wear shoes, you feel like you're a big boy, you feel like you're all grown up, you feel like you're a big, tough, you know, guy, strong guy. Well, nobody felt that way walking around the streets. The humorous end of the story was that I got the last laugh of my wife in that one, and I'll tell you why, because I was told, somebody told me that, keep receipts, everything you bought, hold on to the receipts, hold on to your credit card receipt, whatever it is, and mail it to Lufthansa, because they'll reimburse you for everything, it's their fault, they'll lose your bag, and you have a right to buy whatever you need for the next 3 days, they'll reimburse you to the last, less euro, for less penny, they'll reimburse you. So I sent Lufthansa quite a hefty bill. Or was it my fault? I said, I need sneakers. Because the video is a sandal, so they don't have to reimburse me. I need the sneakers. You lost my sneakers. I need sneakers. So I sent them a bill for $150, whatever it was, fancy pair of sneakers. About $150, that much it was. Those were seeming showing up cameras, and $150. They're sneakers, and then a couple pairs of underwear, and some socks, and some t-shirt, whatever it was. You can't buy one undershirt. You have to buy a pack of three undershirts. So what am I going to do? You can't buy extra clothes. And I'm actually going to tell them, I'm going to stop taking apart the undershirt in the middle of the store. I'm only buying one because the other two are shalom and tzarech. I mean, it's a little bit of, as we quote from our mother, grandma's going to laugh at you. They start telling me to put terms. So I bought a pack of undershirts. And Adam, I think I bought an alarm clock. Because the foam, I don't even had a phone. I don't know what the story was. But I needed an alarm clock to make sure I wouldn't sleep away. Yeah, I think I bought a cheap alarm clock or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Central Stars a nice hefty bill, and they reimbursed me down to the last euro, last penny. They reimbursed me. So now I had the last laugh of my life. Well, I said, if I would have listened to you, if I would have followed your idea and gotten the cheap $10 crocs, I only would have gotten $10 back from Aldanza. Now I got myself $100 back from Aldanza. So you see, Mr. Groffel made that German salesperson be a chakra to me. So what happened with the money then? Where did all this grandiose, this big fortune that I found in my shopping spree in Munich? My wife was so proud of me. It was, she, you know, she can't get me to go to the mall. So the only place I ever go shopping is in Munich. And I would never think of going to the Garden State Plaza. So, like allergic to malls. So the all's well that ends well, because earlier that year, I had gone to Berlin. I was in Germany, to the yeshiva. The yeshiva in Berlin. I tell other stories about that other times. But I developed a kesher with the yeshiva in Berlin. I went to Shiurim. And then a year or two later, I went back. I took my Meshechta back one time with me for a couple of days. It's a whole other story, but another time, another place. I'll share some of those unique stories there. I developed a kasher with some of the Talmidim there and the Shiva there, and the Bain there. And I went there twice. And it's all about Tshuvas. It's all like these boys from Russia, from Eastern Europe. They're all about Tshuvas sitting and learning in the middle of Berlin. So they told me when I was in Berlin, they told me I have to come back sometime for a wedding in Berlin. When the Bachram gets married, there's a boys, there's yeshiva, and there's a girls' school also. When I was there, I spoke in the girls' school, and the boys in yeshiva, whatever, yeshiva. So they told me next time there's a wedding between them. They're all belly children, they all have no family, nothing. Next time there's a wedding, come. We're going to schedule a trip for you to come for a week to say yeshiva, and you come celebrate the wedding. So I went about a year or two later. I went to a wedding in of a bacha from the yeshiva who married one of the girls from the midrashah there, and the wedding was in Leipzig, in another city, an hour away from Berlin. So I had unbelievable close. I spent for the whole day in Mesamechas Lekal. It was one of the most beautiful weddings that I've ever been at. So I felt at the time that I would love to help participate in the wedding, because the yeshiva basically sponsored the wedding. These chazanot have not a penny in the not a euro, not a kopek, not a penny, nothing to their names. So the yeshiva would basically collect money in the dozens of people to give to Dukkah to help make weddings for these people. So I said that I want to be the one to help sponsor the dancing of this wedding, because I'll pay for the music, I'll pay for the musicians for this wedding. I said, why? I said, because I got this free gift from Lufthansa of fancy shoes. Obviously, it wasn't for my purposes, but to go to the next level, to go for a Davar Shel Mitzvah. You wear shoes, you wear sneakers, and you dance at a wedding. So that money that I got out of Lufthansa for the month of the bank that got lost, that's going to go towards paying for this part of the chasna. That was my contribution to the wedding in Berlin. So with Mamash, the Galgal survey, the whole circle completes. That Rosh Baruch Hu made my dad get lost in Barcelona for a couple of days, forced me to buy sneakers, forced the German clerk to tell me the wrong price on the sneakers, and tell me the nonsense on the Crocs. So for two reasons. Number one is that I should get some musr about what it means to be in Kolos, and I should have a meaningful staring at my sneakers every come to drink. Number one. And number two, that I should be able to help contribute to a great Simcha Shel Mitzvah. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is very, very much running the world. So I thought I would just share that inspirational, quasi-humorous angle of the significance of Gilsa Sandal. On both in Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av and Avelus, as well as in Mabon Nefesh. Again, we hope and pray that Yisrael should give us the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvahs of Yom Kippur properly, hope to make it a mikdash, so we'll be able to fulfill the Torahs by Kedi Yubash, but then we're a mikdash, we'll all roll into one of Yom Kippur, a couple of days before Yom Kippur still, hope to make it a mikdash before Yom Kippur of Tavshin. Okay, we'll stop for here, hopefully mention tomorrow, we'll try to give some other kind of maybe a sukkah or something, and Take it moment by moment at this stage. Okay, good. Take care, guys. Good. Be well. Have a great day. Okay.
The recording has stopped.
I'm not going to tell me to know, okay?
No.
All right?
No,
I'm not going to do it. Today. Maybe if the other one can do it.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yeah, guys. Be well.